Joe, how's it going?
Good. Thank you very much.
Good. Andy. Good to see you, man. So what's your thoughts and what's going on here at the 2024 symposium? How's the energy and everything?
That's good. I mean, we're into the second day. From talking to the companies, it was a good crowd. And I came to this conference last year for the first time. You know, I didn't have much expectations for coming to Florida during the summer. What really made it for me was, maybe not so much the companies attending, but the people attending. You know, the quality of the attendees, and then the feedback from the companies saying that, you know, when they talked to these people, they were actually serious investors, which we don't see that much in a lot of these retail conferences. Yeah. I think the attendees really make this conference.
Excellent. So we had some big news happen recently in the Yukon, in BC area. Let's talk about that. What happened?
Yeah. So it was during the Yukon Mining Alliance tour, a tour they do of all the projects in the Yukon to promote exploration and mining in the territory. And I wasn't on the tour, but about they did a visit to the Eagle mine, which is operated by Victoria Gold. And then about a day later or 2 days later, they had a heap leach slip. So a heap leach, Eagle Mine is an open pit, obviously it's in the Yukon. And so they do this thing called a valley fill heap leach. And so there's a gulch, I think it's called N something, gulch, and they're piling all the crushed material from the mine onto this heap leach, and then they pour dilute cyanide on it to extract the gold. And so that's the process. And so this heap leach pad has been stacking for about 2.5 years of crushed material, and I might add finely crushed material, and that has slipped. And so that has actually broken through the barrier that they had at the bottom of the valley fill facility. And now people are worried about there were no serious accidents there, no fatalities. But now, you know, the Yukon Territory government is looking to see if there's been cyanide leaks, which I think right now they're saying nothing significant. But, now the First Nations are wondering, like, you know, are we going to allow these sort of projects anymore? It has implications for future mining potentially in the Yukon Territory because, you know, just last year when I was there, they had issues with the Minto mine and reclamation. And so, you know, because of that heap leach, let's call it a disaster, because in the end, the stock price went down about 80 to 90% based on that news, because, you know, now, and they're in default on their debt of about, I don't know, 380 million or something like that, Canadian. A big problem, not only for the company, but potentially for everybody else that's operating.
Yeah.
Or potentially operating. You know, because now if you want to develop a project, you know, your reclamation bond might be much higher than it was before. And the ability to permit a heap leach might be a lot more difficult right now.
So let's talk about those implications. Is this really, I guess, just in that part of the world, or does this have global implications?
No, I mean, the thing is that we had a heap leach disaster also in Turkey with SSR mining at the Çöpler mine there. That's been going for a while, the mine. Again, that's a fine crush, and so there might be an association. I haven't done a lot of detail work on this, but there might be an association with the risk of these kind of disasters with finely crushed material and stacking. Because a heap leach pad is obviously not a waste dump. A waste dump you could drive on, you could compact, but you don't want to compact a heap leach because you want it aerated. You want there to be permeability because you want that cyanide to go through it, leach the gold and come at the bottom of the liner and, you know, get you the gold out.
Right.
You cannot compact it. Compacting it would add stability to it. But that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for aeration. So, you're probably fighting in between trying to make it stable and make it functional. because you're trying to get, you know, whatever it is, 70, 75% recovery.
Yeah.
That might take 18 months to get the full recovery, but if you compact it, that cyanide won't go all the way through.
You know? Interesting.
Yeah. So those sort of disasters that we've seen are the things that might harm heap leach projects going forward, especially the ones that include multi-stage crushing.
Yeah.
Run of mine seems to work better. Marigold, you know, the SSR Mining's Marigold mining, a mine in Nevada has been stacking. It's a big ore deposit, low grade heap leach, but it's run of mine. They have not had any issues. And,
wow.
And also the issue with, you know, how arid the environment is. More precipitation might make these sort of heap leach pads a little bit more unstable.
Unstable.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, I think the industry now is just seeing how this shakes out.
Yes, and so yeah, and so I guess we got a question as well. You know, in terms of a capital market and efficiency, do we want projects that potentially could fail being built?
Right.
If there's a high risk that they might fail, then it's not good for the industry as a whole. We want not only, because we're driven by potential NPV or potential IRR, but we really got to look at the downside of some of these projects, because in the end, they negatively impact the entire industry.
Everything.
Everything.
Yep. Everything.
Make everything more expensive for everybody.
Yeah. Got it.
And already permitting timelines are long. We don't need to make them longer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's for everybody, really. Let's talk about, since you travel so much and you're really the guy on the ground, you were in Argentina recently.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating to me as well. Lots of projects in Argentina, but they had this big political, really, earthquake recently. How is that affecting the mining? And
It's been very positive. So with Milei coming in, he's a bit of a rogue, but he's a good rogue. Because we've had, you know, the Peronista sort of government since Peron in the 20s, that's basically eroded Argentina over that time span. And now you have somebody new coming in that's putting in what people want, because they've gotten so desperate that they want change now. But this guy doesn't have a big party backing, so he's got other parties helping him to pass legislation. And this important legislation that he's just passed while I was down in Argentina, in Mendoza and Salta, was for large investments. I think they're over $200 million. So if it's an investment over $200 million, specifically for the resource sector, you get the tax rate is lower. I think it goes from 35 to 25%. But the big issue is that the duties that they impose on precious and copper and that are now eliminated after 2 years. And sometimes these are like 8 to 9%, and they're not unlike a royalty because they're all top line. And then as importantly, they've allowed the repatriation of funds. So Argentina might be investable in terms of assets and projects and people, but you couldn't get debt because you can't repatriate funds. And so it was a no-go zone if you wanted to go to a bank.
Right.
Now that's changed. And so suddenly, like, I know there's a lot of jurisdictions that have taken a step backwards, like Mexico, you know, Ecuador's got its crime issues, Colombia, not a big fan of open pits, but Argentina was just sort of stood still and could still look good because everyone's taken a step back. But I think with this new policy or bill, you know, Argentina's actually taken a step forward.
That's great news.
Yeah.
Great news for the industry. What does that have implications to some of the surrounding countries down there? I'm thinking Chile.
Chile's got a left-wing government, and so most people that are operating in Chile are waiting for that guy to go.
Yeah.
So they're almost trying. They've gotten to the point where there's no point in talking to him.
Yeah.
He's got a shelf life, you know, the candle's going. So he's got another 2 years, and then he's gone. And the way in Chile and a lot of these governments, even in the U.S., It's a pendulum now.
Yeah.
It's no longer like you're just going like this and the bureaucracy stays the same and you can count on, you know, if you get a permit now, you'll get the permit later.
Yeah.
Now it's completely different.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing happens in places like Chile. Yeah. They've had the left-wing person for, you know, in 2 years, that'll be 6 years. They'll switch back to the right.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the mining companies are waiting for that.
Got it. Stay and wait. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what you're seeing here as far as companies that you like and what is interesting you here, as well as some of the other companies that you're
interested
in.
Yeah, so the Argentina bit, you know, when I went down there, I went to go see Diablillos. I used to live in Argentina for 8 years, and I used to work up there in Salta, and it's amazing. I mean, that drive that I used to do would take me, like, I don't know, 8 to 10 hours to get from Salta to this place called Tolar Grande. Now, to get to San Antonio de los Cobres, which is the start of what we call the Puna or the Altiplano, now it takes an hour and a half because now they paved that road.
That's
so
great.
Infrastructure, it's so much better now. Yeah. And now with all the development of lithium and borates, you know, mining in Salta is huge. And so Abra Silver had the Diablillos project, probably in one of the best provinces in Argentina. The best ones are San Juan, Salta, and Jujuy. And so they're in there. And now you have this, you know, removal of all the federal sort of barriers to investment in building a project. And granted, it didn't stop the lithium projects, didn't stop the borate projects, but you know, now it allows a project, you know, to be funded from outside by normal bank debt, because a lot of the projects that were developed there, lithium, were Chinese or state-owned companies, even the French Eramet or borates inside Argentina. But now you can have other companies looking for normal debt facilities actually operate there. Removal of duties has huge impacts to people's bottom line. So I think those kind of companies will be, and, you know, potentially the Lundins in the Vicuña district, they'll be very positively impacted by this.
That's excellent. What are your final thoughts that you'd have for people? And, well, actually, let me ask you this. What are you thinking is going to happen towards from now until the end of the year? What's your expectations? Well, that's a six-month window.
I mean, it's a six-month when everything's happening, especially the U.S. election.
Right.
You know, so it's hard to know, but if you take the U.S. Federal Reserve as an independent body, you know, right now, because inflation appears to be coming down, because, you know, the employment issues right now seem to be, I mean, they seem to be weaker. It looks like finally, you know, the policies are taking a hold. And so now most people are thinking, you know, maybe one interest rate cut in the next 6 months, but that's very different from, you know, before the beginning of last year, which we probably talked about in March or January, that people were, you know, predicting six interest rate cuts in 2024. And now the market is fine with just one.
Yeah.
You know, and that will bring in and has brought more ETF inflows, because our problem with the equities is the gold price going up has not impacted some equities. Why? Because the people that are buying the gold, the central banks, do not buy equity.
Right.
But if you have the institutional equities buying the ETFs, the gold ETFs, that spills over into the equities and then goes downstream. But we haven't had that. Mm-hmm. But if we do get this, you know, momentum on the interest rate cut, we could see that change, the inflows would come, and maybe a financing window would open up for some of these people. So that's what I think some of these, they probably want to see. But again, we have the U.S. election, and does somebody say, well, don't cut it before the election. If you're going to do it, cut it after, because you're going to make it look, you know, whatever.
Right.
So if they're independent, truly, you know, they'll do that based on their own data and right, not be driven by politics.
Right. So really just a lot of wait and see now until they
I mean, it's a good window. I mean, in terms of, you know, if you do your due diligence, like asset, and then you get it at this price, start nibbling.
Yeah.
But if it turns, it'll turn quickly, because the issue, like, if you bring in, you know, like Trump again on the mining side, it's more positive. The problem is the volatility.
Yeah.
You know.
As always.
As always. But, I mean, that's the problem. But in the Biden administration, you know, they were taking permits away.
Yeah.
Like the Arctic one.
Right.
Ambler Access Road is basically, seems to me, like dead.
Dead, now. Yeah.
Yeah. and that's killed that project. So at the same time, we're talking about green revolution. We need, copper. We need all these other metals. We're killing all the projects, especially because the U.S. doesn't have a problem with endowment like China does.
Right.
They have endowment. The problem is they don't want to develop it.
Yeah.
They don't want to build processing facilities,
Right.
So where are they going? They're going to other countries and helping them develop.
Right.
So, it's an interesting time because we're a lot of these probably critical minerals are being funded by government.
Yeah.
And they're probably the last people you want determining which projects go into production.
Yeah, exactly. So they say you'll live in interesting times, and boy, do we.
Yeah, but it's been like, I've been here for about 58 years, and so it's all been interesting.
Right. So, Joe, there's really no need for you're very well known in the industry, but I want to give you a shout out. How do people that have never heard of you, how do they reach you and become more familiar with your work?
Yeah, okay. We write a weekly publication called ExplorationInsights.com.
It's phenomenal.
And, there's our portfolio, so it's all about buying and selling, but in it, we talk about rants. We talk about the Victoria Gold incident.
Right.
And this week, I talk about the application of machine learning to resource estimation that we're now introducing into the letter. And that's what my talk's going to be about this week on Wednesday.
Give us a cliff note of that, because I know you're doing a lot with AI. Give us a cliff note.
Well, there's good and bad with it, and I've seen some people that talk about AI discoveries that are not AI discoveries, and there are issues with AI, but I've looked at this guy from Tacit Vision, and he's built this model. He spent 10 years with RCF, and he built this model from scratch, thinking there's got to be a quicker way to get to a high level result. And so basically what it's done is taken whatever million data points from a database, which is the S&P Global Market Intelligence database, and taught this machine, if I have this many results, that should produce probabilistically this kind of resource. And what I'll talk about in the presentation, how I got convinced that this would be a useful tool for me and anybody else in terms of making decisions.
Excellent. That sounds very groundbreaking.
Yeah. Well, let's see.
Well, fantastic. What's your website?
ExplorationInsights.com.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Joe.
All right.
Really appreciate your time with us.
Okay. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Cheers.